welcome to episode 18 of Pandemic Preparedness here at biodefense.com. I'm your host, Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, the editor of naturalnews.com. And it has been over a week since I recorded the last episode. And just to give you some historical perspective so that you understand where this is coming from at the time you're listening to it, I'm recording this on October 28th, 2014. And in the last week, here's a quick summary of what happened and why this is relevant. This is highly relevant. Everything is shifting for the worse on Ebola, unfortunately. A little over a week ago, the White House ordered the national press, the mainstream media, to stop reporting on Ebola. And it was as if a light switch got turned off. What would that have been? About 9 or 10 days ago. The national media just immediately stopped even using the word Ebola. You would hear reporters starting to talk about it, and they would say virus. They couldn't even say the word Ebola anymore, and there was just a total news shutdown. And what was happening was that President Obama realized that people were losing faith in government, and because obviously, if the government can't stop Ebola, then the government can't protect you, right? And so people were starting to say, well, we're not going to vote for the party in power. And the polls really began to shift on the midterm elections. This Ebola outbreak was very, very damaging to the attempts by the Democrats to maintain control of the United States Senate, which is, of course, key in their strategy to grant amnesty and avoid impeachment proceedings against the president. So Obama ordered the media to stop talking about Ebola, and that's exactly what happened for almost 5 days. Until Dr. Spencer, a doctor who had been on the front lines in Liberia, I think it was Liberia, not Sierra Leone, I think he was in Liberia, and he came back to New York City and had run around the city for 10 days, riding on the subway, taking Uber taxis, going bowling, eating at restaurants, going jogging out in public, and it turned out he had Ebola. And he was then confirmed to have Ebola, and he was placed at the Bellevue Hospital in New York City, which, by the way, not long after, Bellevue became so occupied with caring for this one patient, Dr. Spencer, that they had to start sending their ICU patients to other hospitals. In other words, one Ebola patient can seize up the operations of an entire hospital. This is exactly what happened in Dallas, Texas as well. And I'll talk about this more and why this is so important, but basically it means that just a handful of Ebola patients in your city will completely seize up all the hospitals in your city. So immediately after Dr. Spencer was diagnosed with Ebola, and New Yorkers began to freak out, realizing that, hey, this guy's riding the subway. There's like Ebola on the subway. There was tremendous public pressure for New York and New Jersey to set up more stringent quarantines. And so the governors of New Jersey and New York, being, of course, Christie and Cuomo, they set up mandatory 21-day quarantines for high-risk travelers returning to the United States from being on the front lines treating patients, Ebola patients in West Africa. So then, the first thing that happened was a nurse got placed in this quarantine in New Jersey, and the nurse immediately began screaming and whining and complaining about how her civil rights were being violated and how it was a prison and she was being interrogated. And this got major, major press in the mainstream media. She got huge airtime everywhere. Well, turns out she has ties to the CDC. And my theory is that she was planted there to try to dismantle the quarantines. And sure enough, in 48 hours, the governor of New York completely reversed his decision, dismantled the quarantine directive. And the same thing happened in New Jersey, where Christie reversed his position and said she could go home. And what was so fascinating about this is that, you know, of course there was White House pressure to reverse these quarantines because President Obama wants to encourage Ebola to spread in America. That's obvious at this point. Why would you dismantle quarantines when they are one of the few things that can actually work? But the other thing is that the public was taught by the media to say, hey, this nurse tested negative for Ebola. She tested negative twice, we were told. Why are they keeping her? She should be set free. She doesn't have Ebola. She tested negative twice. So this was repeated across the media. But the truth is that people who are saying that are completely ignorant of medical reality. Ebola can't be detected by a test until it reaches a critical mass in your blood, which usually happens right before you become symptomatic. So this idea that you could test a nurse for Ebola and conclusively say that she doesn't have it is complete quackery. It's like saying you can test yourself for pregnancy if you're a woman immediately after you just had intercourse. Well, the pregnancy test doesn't show up right away. The hormones have to change. It takes time for the body to change to where the test is positive. You have to test yourself after having intercourse. Doesn't work that way. Same thing with Ebola. You can't just test yourself after you're infected with Ebola and expect the test to be immediately positive, or it might not even be positive for weeks. The incubation period of Ebola means that Ebola has to have time to replicate in your blood before it reaches a kind of critical mass that can even be picked up by a test. So they could have tested this nurse 10 times, 100 times. Sure, they'd all be negative. It doesn't mean that she doesn't have Ebola. So the public was completely ignorant. The mainstream media was stupid, as usual, having virtually no knowledge of virology or epidemiology or medical diagnostic testing or anything. So this lie was spread all across the country, all through the mainstream media. She tested negative, let her go. And through the White House and all this media pressure, New Jersey and New York dismantled their quarantine policies. They reversed it, leaving us all more vulnerable, which, of course, has been the point all along from the White House, the CDC, and the NIH. Now, the countries that are free of Ebola in Africa right now, such as Nigeria, have achieved that status almost entirely by using border security, travel restrictions, and medical quarantines. These are the only things that work to stop the spread of a pandemic virus. These are exactly the three things that President Obama, the CDC, and the NIH have adamantly opposed with a kind of cult-like fervor to just insist that we can never have quarantines, we can never have travel restrictions, we can never have border security. The inescapable conclusion from this is that the federal government, as it is being run today by Obama and his cohorts, deliberately wants Americans to be infected with Ebola. For whatever reason, I don't know what it is exactly. Maybe he wants to stay in office after declaring an emergency. Maybe they want medical martial law. Maybe the CDC wants to generate billions of dollars for vaccine companies. Maybe the CDC wants to boost its own power and salaries and funding. You know, what better way to do that than make sure there's a big crisis that only the CDC can answer? I don't know the reasons. Maybe it's a population control agenda that's been debated, you know, quite a lot lately on the internet, including on Natural News. I can't tell you because I don't have lunch with these people, so I don't know what they're thinking. I can't tell you what the actual reasoning is behind this, but I can tell you that we should stop listening to the words coming out of these people's mouths, and instead we should look at the actions that they are taking. And from a scientific and epidemiological standpoint, the actions that they are taking are in full alignment with Ebola. They are, in effect, working on behalf of the Ebola virus, doing what Ebola would want them to do. If Ebola had a spokesperson, Ebola would say, please don't have any medical quarantines. Please don't have any travel restrictions. Please make sure all quarantines are, quote, self-quarantines, where people can still run around town and ride on the subways, do whatever they want. And don't control the southern border of the United States either, because that's another vector through which Ebola can enter the country, potentially, obviously, if it becomes a problem in Central or South America. So Ebola would be asking the president to do the things that he is doing right now anyway. So that you can't look at the actions of the situation and reach any other conclusion. Now, if you listen to the words of these people, then of course their words are very deceptive and very influential. And there's a little bit of neurolinguistic programming in Obama's speeches at all times, a little hypnotic language in there that he used to get elected. So the words can trip you up. But if you look at their actions, well, their actions speak for themselves. And their actions are all pro-Ebola. In fact, perhaps the Democratic Party should be renamed the Ebola Party, because they are just rooting for Ebola to come into America so much that they're dismantling the quarantines. Well, I can't blame the entire Democratic Party. It's really just Obama. In fact, I think Democrats running for office right now hate Obama more than the Republicans. Nevertheless, the situation that we are left with is that America is now more vulnerable than ever to Ebola. And this is by design. This is by decisions being made at the highest levels of the United States government. Now, when the quarantines went in place, I was actually prepared to improve my estimates for America being safe against Ebola. As you may know, I said that there's about a 1 in 4 chance that America would be able to prevent the spread of Ebola, meaning 75% chance that Ebola would spread uncontrolled at some point, perhaps in the next couple of years. I was prepared to modify that prediction, that risk assessment, to as much as 1 in 2. In other words, upgrading it to a 50% chance that we could prevent Ebola in America if we run these quarantine centers for travelers, because it's a good idea from a medical or an epidemiological standpoint. Even though we may argue about the civil liberties of it, we may argue with the government's authority to essentially imprison people against their will, and that is a very important debate and a conversation to have. But from a purely medical standpoint, there's no question that the quarantines would be effective at reducing the risk of outbreaks in America. But since this was quickly reversed over the weekend, I'm back to where we started, which is now still 1 in 4 chance, in my opinion, that America will be able to prevent the spread of Ebola. Now, another important topic in all of this, which I hinted at earlier, is the hospitals being overrun very, very rapidly with Ebola patients. And when I say hospitals being overrun, I don't mean there's a mass of Ebola patients coming in. As we've seen in Dallas, it only took one guy. One Ebola patient shut down that hospital's entire emergency center. The ER was shut down for many, many days. And the hospital, there were so many staff members, I think as many as 70, if I recall, who were involved in the treatment of this one patient, Thomas Duncan, that the hospital was unable to provide sufficient care to new patients, so they shut it down. Now, then we've seen the same thing at Bellevue in New York City, where we have this Dr. Spencer, Mr. Party On, party on the subway, party in the bowling alley, party on, Mr. Ebola Party. He took all the, well, not all, but significant resources of the Bellevue Hospital. And now Bellevue is transferring ICU patients to other hospitals because they can't handle them. So I ask you, let's think about this logically. If one patient in a hospital can seize up the hospital operations to such an extreme that the hospital has to either shut down the ER completely or start transferring ICU patients to other hospitals, what do you suppose will happen when there are just 10 Ebola patients in a hospital? It's pretty clear to me that 10 patients would shut down every major hospital that to which 10 patients showed up. I don't think there's a hospital in America that can handle more than 10 Ebola patients at a time based on what we're seeing right now and be able to provide basic healthcare services to other people in the population at the same time. So what happens here is you have Ebola, if it begins to spread in any city, you've got the hospitals become almost useless virtually overnight, which means they're not treating gunshot victims, they're not treating car accident victims, they're not treating heart attacks and strokes. their ability to help other people in the normal traditional ways that hospitals treat acute emergencies, well, that ability vanishes almost overnight. But there's something that's even worse about this. And that is what we're seeing now in Bellevue is that nurses are calling in sick. They don't want to go to the hospital and work around Ebola patients. So they're calling in sick. Of course, they're not really sick. Maybe they're sick of the Ebola lies or sick of the hospital politics or sick of the CDC telling them, oh, you don't need a respirator. Who needs a respirator? It's only a level 4 biohazard that the U.S. Army virologists research while wearing space suits. No, you could do it with a mask and gloves, no problem. I mean, maybe the nurses are tired of being lied to, so they're not showing up. Now, I think it was the WHO that just put out a call for 5,000 more frontline healthcare workers being desperately needed in Liberia. They need 5,000 more workers. Guess what? They can't find them. Have you ever wondered why? Well, because people who are trained in medicine, they're not stupid. They've been watching what's going on. They see these doctors get infected. They see the nurses get infected. And they realize, hey, this is a potentially deadly activity. To be on the front lines treating Ebola patients, you know, I could get killed doing this. It's not an unreasonable thought. So now I think a lot of medical workers are reevaluating their lives. They may be thinking to themselves, hey, I'm 29. I'm too young to die from Ebola. Maybe I'll just go back to my cosmetic surgery clinic and, you know, do facelifts on people for a while. That's a lot less risky. So the problem is that WHO can't find enough healthcare workers, or it may have been the United Nations actually on that call, but some government body has said they need 5,000 more desperately. Now, of course, U.S. hospitals will have the same problem as we've already seen with Bellevue Hospital in New York City, where doctors and nurses, to some degree, not 100% obviously, but to some degree, will say, forget it, man. They'll go find a different job or switch careers or call in sick or disappear. Who knows? I mean, sure, there will be some people who are brave, perhaps courageous, maybe foolish, maybe a combination of all those things, who will show up and they will treat Ebola patients. And there will be some percentage of those doctors and nurses who will die from Ebola. But the bulk of medical workers are, I assure you, right now reevaluating their self-preservation priorities, is probably the best way to put that. So let's summarize just so far what I've covered in this episode before I go on to the next part of this. We've got the dismantling of the quarantines, the insistence by the White House, the CDC, and the NIH that we should have no travel restrictions, we should have no border security, and we should have no real isolation of Ebola carriers. We've got a complicit mainstream media that has taken an active role in spreading lies like, oh, the woman tested negative for Ebola, therefore she doesn't have it. That was repeated just countless times across the ignorant media, which has never really been very well informed about medical issues in the first place, or nutrition for that matter. We've got hospitals being overrun by just one patient. In other words, hospitals, you know, seizing up, not being able to conduct basic medicine just from one Ebola patient showing up. And then we've got medical staff now learning that they need to call in sick or not show up if they want to live. Now, this is creating what I would call a near perfect storm for the spread of Ebola in the United States. But there's one more factor that makes it a total perfect storm, and that has come out of some new research, which was just published. The research shows that Ebola can survive, in other words, remain viable or infectious, on surfaces for up to 50 days in cold weather. And the best surfaces for this were glass and plastic. So sort of non-permeable solid surfaces. Scientists tested Ebola Zaire for its long-term survivability on these surfaces and found that in near-freezing weather, it can survive up to 50 days. Well, that's extraordinary because we've been told that Ebola is... First of all, we've been told you can't catch it from a contaminated surface at all. It has to be direct contact with the patient and their body fluids. That's what we continue to be told by the CDC. Now, another study that just came out, and I believe this was from MIT researchers, also found that sneezes can propel aerosolized particles up to 20 feet away. Now, the CDC has reluctantly admitted that, yeah, sneezes can travel 3 feet away, but they won't say that it's any more than 3 feet, even though we now know it's 20 feet. So think about this. How pathetic is the CDC, by the way, to just constantly lying about everything? They're lying about the incubation period. Oh, it's only 21 days, not 42. Sneezes only travel 3 feet, not 20. And you don't need a quarantine to protect your city of 20 million people. No problem. Just let Ebola carriers just frolic around the subway trains. Even when Ebola can survive on surfaces, possibly stainless steel, certainly the type of surfaces that are common in subway trains. So what a pathetic, negligent organization we are seeing here from the federal government. Just unbelievable. But think about how this now creates the perfect storm. We are approaching the winter season. New York gets freezing weather. Ebola survives by the way, if you freeze Ebola, it survives almost indefinitely. If you don't freeze it but keep it really cold, close to freezing, it survives up to 50 days. So think about this, folks. You've got people coming into New York City, nurses and doctors who've been treating Ebola patients in West Africa who are themselves infected with Ebola, who are not going to be stopped by any kind of border security or airport security because they may not be symptomatic at the time they arrive. Dr. Spencer wasn't, no fever, nothing. They just let them right on through. They're not going to be placed in quarantines. They're going to be free to roam the city, potentially coughing, sneezing, drooling, or whatever else they do, spreading body fluids, sweating, for example, possibly in gyms, in subways, in theaters, in restaurants, airports, train stations, you name it. And that this Ebola is going to remain viable for up to 50 days in cold weather. And that in many of these places, Ebola is underground, you know, in the subway, so it's not getting any sunlight. And sunlight contains the UV rays, which destroy Ebola. So underground, in the subway, you're not getting the UV light. The Ebola can remain viable for quite some period of time. Or if it's outdoors but in the shade, in the cold, it can remain viable for quite a long period of time. This, my friends, is the perfect storm for Ebola to spread in the United States. It's the perfect storm, and it has been engineered and put into place by the president and the CDC, NIH, and whatever medical experts that they can arm twist into supporting this position. Now, it's very clear to me that there are many virologists and epidemiologists out there who are completely opposed to all of this and demand quarantines, but they're all silenced. And you know why they're all silenced? Because the NIH controls virtually all the research funding in America. If you're a virologist or a scientist studying infectious disease and you speak out against the NIH, you will have all your funding cut. All your grant proposals will be denied, denied, denied. You will be blackballed from the industry. Your career is over. So you don't dare speak out. This is why it's bad to have government in charge of all the research funding, because they control the narrative and they silence any scientific opposition to their quackery ideas like, oh, Ebola only has a 21-day incubation period and you can't catch it from a contaminated surface and you don't need a quarantine. So this is what's happening today. The opposition to this has been completely silenced by the threat of losing research funding. So we have the entire Ebola decision-making chain of command is now being driven purely by politics, not medical science. From a medical science point of view, and I can't believe that here I am, the health ranger, having to defend the integrity of the medical science of blocking viral infections. But from a medical science point of view, isolation is what works. You track people who might be infected, and you isolate them from the rest of the population. You do that by controlling borders. You do that by testing people wherever you can, but a negative test doesn't mean they don't have it. You're looking for positive tests. And you have quarantines. Instead, in America today, we have politics driving all the key decisions, which means Ebola is winning. As long as Obama keeps making these types of decisions, and the CDC keeps making these decisions as well, Ebola will keep winning. And so at some point, you have to ask yourself, what is the purpose of this? Why do they want Ebola to spread in America? Now, before I answer that question, let me bring your attention to one more thing. I published a story based on a piece originally written in Veterans Today by Gordon Duff, in which Duff says that biological terrorism is already underway in America, that Ebola patients are being brought in and distributed across U.S. cities right now, but we're not hearing about it yet because of the near total media blackout ordered by the White House, or perhaps these people have not yet become symptomatic and have not yet been admitted to the hospitals. But the point of his story is that this is spreading. This is being intentionally spread across America right now, today. Now, I've been reading a number of books on virology because I always like to learn new things. And I don't want to be, you know, like the ignorant public that thinks one negative test means you're free of Ebola. So I was reading this book called The Viral Storm by a scientist named Nathan Wolfe. The book is actually called The Viral Storm, The Dawn of a New Pandemic Age. And in this book, here's what he says. Bioterror is among the most serious concerns for security experts. It is an ideal tool, he says, for the weaker parties in so-called asymmetrical warfare where enemies differ significantly in the resources and firepower they can draw on for battle. And he goes on to talk about how terror groups can use viruses to attack a much stronger enemy target. And he even says, quote, perhaps the only comparable situation is the long-term horror of some nuclear fallout expressing itself in generations of mutated offspring and high rates of cancer as seen in Hiroshima. But those insidious effects are environmental and thus relatively slow. A fast-acting, fast-spreading viral weapon would have that impact over days, not decades. And finally, he says, quote, it would be a huge mistake to underestimate the risk for bioterror, and most who study it contend that it is just a matter of time before it's unleashed on a human population. Again, those are the words of Nathan Wolfe, author of The Viral Storm. So, if you think about the risk of bioterrorism, you have to immediately look at what Obama has put into place, the total lack of quarantines, the lack of airport security, the lack of border security, creating really almost a beckoning opportunity for bioterrorists to target the United States with Ebola. In other words, the policies of the White House and the CDC have made it significantly easier for evil-minded terrorists to sneak an infected Ebola bomber, if you want to call him that, to sneak that person into the United States while they are asymptomatic. It's not difficult to get infected with Ebola if some suicide bomber were willing to do that with the hopes of then coming to America and releasing it in a place like New York City. Now, Dr. Spencer ran around New York City with Ebola for 10 days and nobody stopped him. The only good news there is that he doesn't want to kill New Yorkers. So when he became aware that he had Ebola, he stopped and reported to the hospital and is now in the care of the hospital. So he did the responsible thing at that point, even though, of course, he was highly irresponsible for 10 days before that. But once he realized he had Ebola, he basically, turned himself in. A terrorist won't do that, folks. If there is a person who is so evil-minded and so destructive that they literally want to cause maximum human casualties to America because they consider America to be the enemy, then they can do exactly what Dr. Spencer did, except on day 10, they don't turn themselves in. Instead, they run around Grand Central Station, spitting on their hands and wiping everything with their spit or whatever, If body fluids are infectious, all you got to do is spit on everything. And it's like a weapon deployment. Now I ask you, what could stop this? You can't stop someone from spitting around New York City. People do it all day long. You can't stop them. I mean, what do you have, the Spit Patrol, the NYPD Spit Patrol Division? We're now looking for mad spitters who are circling the city, spreading Ebola with drool and spittle, aerosolized mucus particles, sneezers and spitters and coughers will now be ticketed on site by the New York Police Department Spit Patrol. I mean, seriously? Really? So you can't stop it. If someone intentionally wants to do this, you can't stop it because of these policies. So now we really have a perfect storm. In fact, we have a perfect blank storm. I'm not even going to say it. When the blank hits the fan, we have a perfect blank storm of Ebola potentially threatening a place like New York City. And New York City is now, it's got to be the number one most obvious target in the minds of everybody who hates America and wants to destroy America, because there's the high population density. There's the cold weather. There's the subway system and the A train and the L train. It's the ideal place for someone who wants to pull this off. And they watched Dr. Spencer run around for 10 days. No one stopped him. So they must be thinking, well, gee, this isn't difficult at all. And they also got to be thinking, well, thank goodness that President Obama pressured New Jersey and New York to dismantle the quarantines, because now we can waltz right in without being stopped by anybody. And all we got to do is get a hotel room and incubate for 10 days or whatever it takes. And then, they're off running around with their spit. And in some ways here, I make light of some elements of this, but this is not a laughing matter. Obviously, this is very serious stuff. And it is extremely frustrating that our president is actively pursuing policies that place Americans at risk and make it easier for biological terrorists to achieve their goals in a city like New York City. It's very frustrating to me to witness this all taking place, knowing what's coming, knowing how easy it must be for enemies of America to pull this off if they wanted to. And then I see this Veterans Today report that talks about bioterrorists already being placed across the country. I can't say if it's true or not yet, but it certainly is a viable scenario that's being made easier by the federal government. And so you have to ask, who benefits from an Ebola outbreak? And this is the final point in this episode, and I'll wrap it up with this point. But who benefits from Ebola getting loose in America? Who benefits? And here you have to get into two actual conspiracy agendas. Conspiracies happen all the time. The history of conspiracies is really the history of America. The history of the world is full of conspiracies. The CDC and the WHO committed a conspiracy with a swine flu virus to scare the global population into buying vaccines. That was a conspiracy to make money. And it worked. So a conspiracy is any time that two or more parties get together and plot to do something. So who is plotting to make America weak in terms of defending itself against Ebola, and why would they be doing that? So here are the dominant possibilities. And I can't say if any of these are true. Because, again, like I said earlier, I don't eat lunch with these people. I don't know what they're thinking. But I do know they're crazy. They're mad. There's the depopulation agenda, where the globalists want to reduce world population by 90%. And that a viral outbreak is probably the easiest way for them to accomplish their weird, wicked goal. Then there's the vaccine sales agenda. The CDC, which functions as a marketing branch of the pharmaceutical industry, is constantly trying to make money for more vaccines. And they do that by, in this case, or at least the theory is, maybe they want to allow Ebola to spread a little bit, crop up in a few cities, and scare everybody into getting a vaccine. And then, sure enough, you know, the drug companies rake in another $10 billion on mandatory Ebola vaccines. So that's a very viable theory, and that is exactly how the CDC operates. Another theory is the medical martial law theory, that this government under Obama, which is wildly paranoid, which is totally power hungry, and respects no human rights, no civil rights, no constitutional rights, nothing, that it wants to find a way to declare martial law and seize control and cancel the elections in 2016, keep Obama in power, whatever. The way this theory goes is that a large enough spread of Ebola would allow for the president to declare medical martial law and suspend elections. Again, I don't know if that's true. That's just one of the scenarios that is being talked about. But another scenario, which I actually give this a little more credibility, is that the global financial markets have been overdue for a collapse, or you could say a major unraveling, a major correction, for several years. In fact, the global markets should have crashed in 2008 when the banksters needed that $1 trillion bailout because they were all deemed too big to fail, and there was about to be a systemic global collapse of the entire banking system. That happened in the fall of 2008. And since then, the United States, well, not, I can't even say the government, the Federal Reserve, the private banking cartel, has generated, well, about $2 trillion in bailout funds, maybe more. I probably lost track. But at least $2 trillion given to the banks, and then they've been pumping money into the economy, about $200 billion every quarter in the years since. Now, this money pumping, what's called quantitative easing, because they don't want everyday people to understand that it really is just currency counterfeiting, this has been necessary to keep the market propped up. And in fact, it's just this flooding of new money into the banks that has prevented the global debt collapse from taking place. Now, these bailouts did not cure the disease of runaway global leveraged debt and derivatives debt and a debt-based economy. They did not cure the disease. All they did was delay the inevitable. The inevitable is a massive global market collapse, a crash of all the outstanding debt, especially the derivatives, of which there is a $1 quadrillion in debt now globally, an actual quadrillion. I'm not just making that up like kids on the playground. You know, no, I'm going to travel a quadrillion miles. No, this is actual a $1 quadrillion in debt, which is $1,000 trillion. That's a lot. So you've got all this global debt that must be unraveled. The correction has to take place just due to the laws of economics. Well, it turns out that an Ebola pandemic provides the perfect cover for it. It's beautiful from the point of view of the bankers, because the bankers, number one, they just don't want to be held responsible for all the crimes they've committed, all the massive theft and wealth confiscation. And they don't want to be held accountable. And in virtually every contract, there is a force majeure section, or an acts of God section, which provides indemnity when so-called acts of God take place in the world. And what they can do with Ebola is they can have it designated an act of God, even though it might have been developed by the Department of Defense as a bioweaponized form of the virus. They can call it an act of God because they can blame it on Mother Nature. So any financial damage that happens during a market crash in the middle of a global pandemic that has economic consequences can simply be swept under the rug, where everybody says it's not our fault. It all happened because of Ebola. So if they get Ebola into the United States and it has some kind of significant impact in, for example, New York City, where there is something called Wall Street, where all the financial people are focused in this country, and suddenly they can't come to work. Maybe there's a massive quarantine. Maybe there's a massive spread of Ebola that takes out a lot of the people. Maybe public transportation is shut down, whatever the case may be. Then you're going to have a real window of opportunity for these financial thieves to get away with all the theft that they have conducted, all the confiscation over the years, by simply letting this crash unfold and then invoking the acts of God sections of all their contracts and all their user agreements. And even when you put money in a bank and you think you're FDIC insured, I can guarantee you there is language in the FDIC coverage that says, except for acts of God. So you think you're going to get, you know, your, what is it, $100,000 or $200,000 that they cover? You think you're going to get paid back if you lose your money in a bank in the middle of a financial crisis, in the middle of an Ebola pandemic? No. The FDIC, first, it will be bankrupt very rapidly anyway, but it will just say, sorry, act of God, you don't get jack squat. And then all your money is stolen by the banksters, which is, of course, the whole point. That's how they operate. It is primarily a system of massive theft. And the Federal Reserve, remember, is a system of stealth covert theft where they create money and cause price inflation while keeping interest rates so low that the difference between the inflation and the interest rates is the confiscated amount. So they're confiscating your wealth year after year to the tune of about 5 or 6% a year right now. That confiscation is already taking place. And yes, you're a victim of it. And many of you may not have even known that, but that is taking place. When they print money, they steal from you. They steal purchasing power from you, which is why food prices keep going up. It's when you pay more, you got to thank the Federal Reserve for increasing the base of the money supply by $200 billion a quarter, which they're not giving to you. They're giving to the banks. So when this is all said and done, this is massive, massive theft on a global scale, with Ebola possibly being the cover story. And it's the perfect cover story. So that's why I think the bankers, probably the globalist bankers, are rooting for this so they can unwind their debt problems without having to take a hit for it. But again, I discussed some of the other possible theories as well: population control, making money for the vaccine companies, medical martial law for political reasons, and then now this fourth one, the cover story for the global banking collapse. So those are all theories of what may be behind this. But the last point here is that there are different competing factions at that level. So even though sometimes we talk about globalists, which by that we just mean really high-powered, influential people at the global level, when we talk about globalists, we sometimes think they're all pulling in one direction. They're all sitting around deciding exactly what to do and following the same plan. No, it's not like that at all. Globalists have competing interests. Some of them own pharmaceutical companies. Others own media companies. Others are invested in politics or mining operations or whatever the case may be, weapons manufacturing. Some of them want war. Some of them don't want war. Some of them want martial law. Others don't want martial law. There are competing factions. And what I really think we're seeing right now is a lot of jockeying for position among the most powerful globalists who are at odds with each other to some degree over what to do about Ebola. I can guarantee you that every institution, every corporation, and every globalist operator is trying to figure out how they can exploit the Ebola situation for their gain. There's no question about that. Every corporation wants to make money from it. Every political operative knows, you know, quote, never let a crisis go to waste. You've heard that quote before. Every institution, such as the CDC, wants to gain power and gain a larger budget from this. Everybody is looking at Ebola and trying to figure out, well, how can we gain a bigger budget from this or more power or achieve our goals of, like, the banks saying, you know, steal everybody's accounts and get away with it. How do we make that happen and use Ebola as the excuse? So you are not going to see one unified, homogenized global response to this. You're going to see some bickering as these players jockey for position. But the end game is pretty clear. They want to use this crisis. They want to exploit it to achieve their goals of making money, gaining power, reducing population, gaining political positions, or setting themselves up for some other future gain. No one in a position of power is looking at this and saying, how do we help save humanity? That is not in their vocabulary. They don't think that way. They're looking at it and saying, how do we exploit this situation for their own selfish gain? That is the sad truth of what is happening in our world today and who runs it and how evil they are. It's totally evil. Don't care. They don't give a damn about human lives or human suffering. All they give a damn about is their own power and profits and domination of the world. And they're going to figure out how Ebola can help them achieve that. So I know this has been a lot to take in, and we've explored a lot of areas here. Don't be suckered by what you hear in the mainstream media. Don't be swayed or hypnotized by the president's speeches. Instead, look at his actions, not his words. His words are meaningless. Words come and go. Look at what he does, and you will know the truth about what's really happening. When the quarantines are being dismantled, when the border security is being denied, when the hospitals are being shut down from just one patient showing up, you are looking at the ingredients for a perfect storm of Ebola being spread in America, either deliberately or accidentally. In both cases, we are right now in serious trouble. And I can only hope that more sensible voices would rise to the surface here so that we could stop this. But if you look around today, you may have noticed that sensibility has been censored. People who make sense do not get on the mainstream media. They do not normally attain high levels of political office, and they are not allowed to have any voice on the internet as well. So the crazier and more evil the people are, the more they are allowed to be on television or have successful websites. Meanwhile, all the websites that tell the truth are punished and penalized by the search engines and the ranking systems and all that. So keep that in mind. And remember to keep coming back to biodefense.com and naturalnews.com, because we are one of the few last remaining truly independent voices of reason and sanity, calling for actions that would save human lives and end human suffering and protect America from terrorism. That's what we are really about, and that is exactly why you will never see us on CNN. Wouldn't want someone like us to have a voice and get a message out there. But thanks for listening. Go ahead and spread this. Spread the word on this URL. Download the audio. Share the audio on the torrent websites or with anyone that you think could benefit from this. Thank you for listening. My name is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, the editor of naturalnews.com.